After his enlightenment upon seeing the morning star, the Buddha said this: "The ambrosial Dharma I obtained is profound, immaculate, luminous, and unconditioned." According to another account, Buddha said this: "From the very first, all beings are imbued with Buddha nature." And according to yet another account, he said, "I and all beings together attain enlightenment at the very same time." What could be better than this? Cut! Right now, gray clouds and rain outside, bright and shining on the inside. Every year at this time, sanghas all around the world celebrate Buddha's enlightenment. As you've already seen here at Blue Heron and Golden Wind, we celebrate by retelling the story of Buddha, or one of the many stories of Buddha's awakening, paying homage to the three jewels, and chanting, meditating, and offering flowers to the great Buddha. With all this focus on Buddha, it might be easy to forget that this ceremony is also equally about you. Here's just one example. In the Zen tradition, when we pay homage to the three jewels, we're simultaneously paying homage to the mind within us that aspires to our own awakening. This is not a dualistic exercise. As most of you know, or if you don't, the three jewels are the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. They're the three pillars that support us as we walk this path. The Buddha serves as our role model and teacher. The Dharma, which also means truth, it means many things, in fact, are Buddha's teachings. And as our temple rules tell us, the sound of the waterfalls and the birds' songs are also teaching us the truth of this moment whenever we stop to listen. So it so happens that these three quotes I recited a minute ago shine a light on each of the three jewels, or maybe I should say your three jewels. So let's take a look at them one by one. The first quote tells us something about that might surprise you about the Buddha. It begins with the quote I already read. "The ambrosial Dharma I obtained is profound, immaculate, luminous, and unconditioned." But wait a minute. Here's what he said next: "Even if I explain it, no one will understand. So I think I will remain here in silence in the forest." And he did just that. He continued to sit in silence on his mat for another 7 days. Buddha's enlightenment was so powerful, so transformative, that he initially thought it would be impossible to even describe it, much less help others to awaken for themselves. Of course, as we all know, he changed his mind. He taught the Dharma for the rest of his life, 45 years nonstop. This change of heart is a profound gift beyond measure to each of us. If you stop and think about it, it's pretty miraculous that Buddha's life and teachings have survived over 2,500 years in a way that makes it possible for you and I to ease suffering, not only for ourselves, but for others in that ever-widening circle. Authentic Buddhist practice is so widely available to us these days that it's hard to imagine things being any other way, especially here where we live, here in California, in the States in general. All we have to do is hop onto our favorite search engine and type Zen Center near me, and boom, you're off and running. What could be easier? But it's not that long ago that things were quite different. For example, my teacher and the teacher of a number of us, Zen Master Jibong, literally spent years searching for an authentic Zen master. And it wasn't until the early 1970s that he found Zen Master Sung San when he came here from Korea. And even I remember talking with a Korean woman after a retreat in the early 2000s who was going to school in the Northwest. And she told me that it was nearly impossible for a lay person like her to participate in a real Zen retreat until she came here. Her statement really struck me because while I was practicing here in Seattle, I often wondered what it would be like to practice in Korea and get a taste of real Zen. And it wasn't until I had the opportunity to do some practice in Korea that I realized I'd been doing real practicing all along. Pretty incredible. So here's a thought experiment for you. And please try to participate. Actually, please participate. Imagine, if you can, how many beings exist in the limitless universe. And please don't exclude all the microbes, or the possibility, at least, of space aliens. Got it? Pretty vast. Of all these beings, ask yourself how rare it is for you to be born into a human body. And of all the human beings born, how many have encountered Buddha's teaching and the Dharma? Buddha gave a talk to try to illustrate this very thing, the preciousness and rarity of being born human, which Ann Popesonin mentioned yesterday. Just the sheer miracle of being here and being alive. He illustrated this point with a story, a parable kind of a half-blind turtle who lives over a million miles deep in a world completely covered with water. She can never rest because her belly is as hot as red-hot iron, and her back is always freezing cold, like a snow-covered mountain peak So once every 100 years, she makes an arduous journey up to the surface in search of a log with a hole that is perfectly sized into which she can rest, wedge herself and rest so she can cool her belly in the water and keep her back warm in the sun. I think it might be even more rare than that. But I have to tell you that when I first heard this story a number of years ago, it didn't have much impact on me. I think I just took it as another one of those nice folk tales. But as I get older and look back on all the seeming unrelated experiences that somehow brought me to Zen, I still can't get over how truly lucky I am to have found this Zen center here, the Zen Center at Golden Wind in Southern California, my teacher, and the Sangha that I've had the pleasure of being with. This second quote focuses on the Dharma, the second of the three jewels. And as I read, from the very beginning, all beings are imbued with Buddha nature. Upon his awakening, Buddha realized that there are absolutely no prerequisites for our own awakening, no barrier. Each of us already has it. It's been in our possession right from the very start. So no matter what you've been told by others or what you continue to believe about your lack of qualifications, this seed is already fully present in you, waiting to bloom. The question is, do you believe it? Do you really believe it? Most of us don't. I remember a number of years ago at Buddha's Enlightenment Day, and my offering of a flower was to all of us here present today who had not attained awakening. I, at the time, was really feeling like there was kind of a world of haves and have-nots, and I was on the have-not side. I talked to my Zen master, Jibong, about it. And he said, yeah, I've heard that a number of times over the years. Just keep practicing. And if you don't believe it, fake it. Just keep doing it. Pour all of that doubt into what we call in Zen, great doubt. Great question. Not about this thing called I, but great question about the incredible, seemingly mysterious unfolding of this present moment. So why don't most of us believe it? And I hope you walk away with that question in your mind after the ceremony today, because I think it might be the most crucial question you can ask yourself. What is it that keeps you from feeling like a fully bona fide member of Buddhist practice? I think it's because of something we talk about all the time, which is we view ourselves through a distorted lens. In Zen, of course, we call this the small self or small I. This small self is centered around our ego. And it gives us a sense of having a permanent, separate, independent I. And if we believe we are permanent and separate from the world around us, which I think most of us believe when we walk into a Zen center for the first time. This is something we need to look into first. So this attachment to our small self, this self that's based on a fragile ego or has been covered over with bravado, posturing, protecting. We have to first realize that this distorted lens is perhaps the greatest cause of suffering for ourselves and others. It feels so precious to us that we're vigilant about protecting it from any kind of threat. I should say perceived threat. And sometimes at a very great cost. It also fosters a feeling of isolation, which makes us feel incomplete. So we grasp for things that we think will fill that hole that we think is in us. Both of these attachments send us on an endless cycle of suffering. But if we look closely at this so-called self through Zen training, we can begin to see it's really a mental construct created by our conditioned mind, which in fancy Buddhist terms we call karma. We all inherit ideas about what is true, what is not true. We internalize opinions that are handed down to us from our community, from our parents, from supposedly wise people. So this declaration that Buddha made, that you too are imbued with Buddha nature, tells us that there's a way to see through this suffering, through this precious self-image, and reveal our true nature. But how? So can we believe it? Can we see that this attachment to small self is something to really be investigated? Zen Master Sung San always said, let go of your small self and become your true self. For me, for many years, that felt like I had to abandon this precious me, all that I had. Let go of it. Cast it aside and become something else. He didn't mean it that way. So how do we do this? And this brings us to our third and final quote. I and all beings together attain enlightenment at the same time. This quote is about waking up. But who is it that wakes up? It's not I. As Buddha said in this quote, it's I and all beings. Remember, don't get even trapped by the word being. Just keep that in sense of inclusion growing and growing. This is a radical shift in perspective. Radical shift. The everyday mind that is you has not, in fact, gone away, but has realized its intimate connection to all beings, to all things. When our discriminating mind, shorthand for thinking mind, ceases to separate everything into this and that and that and that, and goes one step further and says, this is good, this is bad, I need this, please don't make me ever have to look at that again. We split the entire universe apart. But when we let go of that, even for a second or two, and even if you've not been practicing that long, you might experience a little gap in this thinking mind where you just feel present. We call this before thinking, before thinking. Our mind is awake, it's aware, and it just experiences before we split everything into this and that. This is what we call the experience of everything becoming one. We can experience this for ourselves. And when we experience it directly for ourselves, it can have a profound effect on how we relate to the world. The dividing line between self and other fades away and may disappear completely for a period of time. And the need to protect ourselves from these perceived threats that we're always on guard about, the offenses to our self-image recedes, and feelings of loneliness and isolation are alleviated by a realization that we truly belong. Perhaps the most transformative aspect of getting this taste of the One is that when we meet others, we start seeing the so-called others as ourselves. This dividing line, it's possible for it to soften to the point where you can see the other in you and you in the other. This is the meaning, the real meaning of Buddhist compassion. It's not so easy to walk the Buddhist path alone. All of us who come here regularly have already figured that out for ourselves. We can practice at home, but if we try to do it in isolation, it's incredibly difficult. We need the support from others to offer support, practice together, and keep us on the right track. This is Sangha. So going all the way back to Buddha's lifetime, people practice together. This Sangha is the third jewel, the third pillar on which we rely to keep us on the path. When we first come to Blue Heron, or I should say when you first came to Blue Heron or Golden Wind, you may have been pleasantly surprised to realize that others were looking out for you. As our practice matures, I hope we find ourselves being the ones looking out for others. This is just one of the many ways Sangha has a way of expanding our personal borders beyond I, me, and mine to include an ever-widening circle of inclusion. Near danger. Buddha is the morning star. The morning star is Buddha. Originally, no Buddha, no morning star. Buddha is Buddha. The morning star is the morning star. Three truths. Which one's correct? Ha! Your program says it's time to recite the four great vows.